Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're going to be tackling a case that I think really makes you think about what equal opportunity means, especially when we're talking about education. San Antonio Independent School District v. Rodriguez.
Big one.
It is a big one.
Yeah.
You're interested in this Supreme Court case,
Mm
and we've got all the opinions here ready to dissect,
Let me do
majority
We
dissenting,
got a concurring opinion.
even a concurring opinion.
This case is fascinating because it's not just about the law.
Yes.
You know, it's about real people, real communities trying to grapple with some pretty fundamental questions about fairness
Absolutely.
and how we fund our schools.
Yeah.
Really gets to the heart of what kind of society we want to be.
Yeah. So, okay. So this case takes us back to the 70s.
Way back.
Texas had this school funding system,
Yeah.
and it relied heavily on, and get this, local property taxes.
Oh, yeah.
So basically, we're saying the wealthier the neighborhood,
Mm-hmm.
the more money their schools got.
Yeah, it was a two-tiered system. The state had a program called the Minimum Foundation Program, and that provided a basic level of funding for all the districts in the state.
Okay.
So you can kind of think of it like a safety net,
Got it.
you know, making sure every school at least has the essentials.
Right.
But then on top of that, each district
Okay.
could add to their budget using revenue from local property
And
taxes.
that's where
Interesting.
things get really interesting because
Okay.
property values varied so much from district to district.
Right.
The amount of money that schools got from those local taxes
Yeah.
created some really shocking disparities.
Yeah, and this case really brings that to light
It does.
because it focuses on two very different school districts,
Yeah.
Edgewood and Alamo Heights.
Two very different worlds.
Right, Edgewood, predominantly Mexican American,
Right.
much lower property values. Alamo Heights, a much wealthier district.
Yeah, and the difference in per pupil spending was astounding.
We're not just talking about a small gap here.
Yeah.
In the late 60s,
Right.
Edgewood had about $26 per student from local property taxes,
Okay.
while Alamo Heights had over $333
Wow, that's over.
per student.
That's more than 10 times.
Huge
Yeah,
difference.
so no wonder parents from Edgewood were like,
Yeah.
the system's kind of stacked against our kids.
Yeah, they felt like the system was rigged
Right.
and they challenged it,
Yeah.
saying it violated the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment.
Okay, so they're saying this is denying their children equal protection under the law
Exactly.
simply because they live in a poor district.
That was their argument.
So, how did the court respond to that argument?
Well, the majority opinion
Yeah.
actually analyzed the discrimination claim from a couple of different angles.
Okay.
They considered whether the Texas system discriminated against poor persons in general,
Okay.
against those who were relatively poorer than others,
Okay.
or against everyone living in poor districts.
So, did they consider any of those groups like a suspect class deserving of special protection under the law?
That's the question, isn't it?
Yeah.
And ultimately, they said no.
Okay.
They rejected the idea that wealth alone
Yeah.
should be a suspect classification in this case.
Okay.
And their reasoning was twofold.
All right.
First, they pointed out that there wasn't evidence of absolute deprivation.
Okay.
The kids in Edgewood were still getting an education,
Right.
even if it wasn't as well funded as in Alamo Heights.
Okay. And what was the second reason?
They said defining a disadvantaged class based on wealth was just too messy.
How so?
Well, where do you draw the line?
Oh, right.
You know, are we talking about a specific income level?
Okay.
Or are we talking about net worth?
Got it.
And the court found that the poorest families weren't always concentrated in the poorest districts. So that really complicated
Okay,
things.
so that suspect classification argument didn't really
Didn't fly.
didn't fly, but they also argued that education itself is a fundamental right.
That's right.
Right.
They argued that education is so essential for personal growth,
Yeah.
for participating in our democracy, that it should be recognized as a fundamental right
Right.
protected by the Constitution.
Which would have been a game changer.
It would have been huge.
Did they agree?
Unfortunately, no.
Oh.
The majority opinion held that it wasn't the court's place to create new fundamental rights
Okay.
that weren't explicitly or implicitly laid out in the Constitution.
So they're saying even though education is super important, it's not their job to say it's a fundamental right.
That's essentially what they were saying. They
Wow.
said, you know, it's up to the legislature,
Yeah.
not the courts,
Got it.
to make those kinds of policy decisions.
That's a pretty significant statement.
Yeah, it is.
But I know there were some strong dissenting opinions in this case.
Oh, absolutely.
What did those justices have to say?
Justices White And Marshall, in particular, really pushed back on majority's reasoning. They argued that those funding disparities weren't just numbers on a page.
Right.
They translated into real differences in the quality of education that kids were receiving.
Yeah, I mean, I can imagine more resources usually means better teachers.
Sure.
Smaller class sizes.
More course options.
More options, yeah.
Absolutely.
So Justice Marshall, in his dissent,
yeah,
was particularly concerned about the reliance on these local property taxes.
It was.
He saw it as actually undermining the very principle of local control.
Ironic, isn't it?
It is, because I was going to say, isn't letting communities decide how to fund their schools the definition of local control?
Right, you would think so, but Marshall argued that when you base school funding on property taxes, you're automatically giving wealthier districts this huge advantage
right
out of the gate.
Yeah.
It creates this uneven playing field that's really hard for poorer districts to overcome, even if they try to raise their own tax rates.
Yeah, it's like starting a race where some runners are already miles ahead.
Exactly. And on top of that, Marshall was really skeptical that the political process would just magically fix this problem.
So he didn't have much faith that wealthier districts would willingly share their resources.
No, not really.
To create a more equitable system.
He pointed out that historically the political process has often favored those with more resources.
Yeah.
So he doubted it would be the solution in this case either.
So we've got this system that creates these huge funding gaps between school districts.
Yeah.
The court's not convinced that it violates the Equal Protection Clause or that education is a fundamental right.
Right.
So what was their reasoning for ultimately upholding the Texas system?
Well, to understand that, we need to look at the legal standard the court used to evaluate the case.
Okay.
It's called rational basis review.
Rational basis. What does that even mean?
It basically means the court was looking for a reasonable connection between the government's actions.
Okay.
In this case, the school funding system.
Okay.
And a legitimate government goal. They weren't looking for a perfect system.
Right.
Just one that wasn't totally arbitrary or irrational.
Got it. So did they find a rational link between the Texas system and a legitimate state goal?
They did.
Okay.
The majority argued that the system, even with its flaws, did have a rational relationship to legitimate state purposes, such as local control over education.
Okay.
They put a lot of emphasis on the idea that communities should have a say in how their schools are run and funded.
But didn't Justice Marshall argue that relying on property taxes actually undermined local control?
Exactly.
Especially for these poorer districts.
He pointed out that wealthier districts could easily raise more money through property taxes.
Right.
Even with lower tax rates, simply because their property values were higher.
Yeah.
Poorer districts, on the other hand, were stuck with lower property values.
Right.
So even if they raised their tax rate significantly, they'd still struggle to generate the same level of funding.
It almost feels like this self-fulfilling prophecy.
It does, doesn't it?
Like wealthier districts get more resources, which helps them stay wealthy.
Right.
And maintain their advantage in the education system.
That's a great point.
And Marshall also raised concerns about whether the political process would actually address these inequalities.
Yeah, he argued that the system was inherently biased towards those with more resources.
Right.
And he doubted that those in power would willingly change a system that benefited them.
So the majority focused on rational basis and local control.
Mm-hmm.
Dissenting opinions are highlighting these real-world consequences of the funding disparities.
Right.
And the potential for them to become even more entrenched.
Yeah.
What about Justice Stewart?
Ah, Justice Stewart.
He agreed with the outcome.
He did.
But he also called the system chaotic and unjust.
Yeah, his concurring opinion is really interesting.
Yeah, how do we make sense of that?
Well, it highlights this tension between legal principles and just a sense of fairness.
Okay.
He seemed to acknowledge that the system had some serious moral flaws.
Okay.
Even if he wasn't convinced that they rose to the level of a constitutional violation.
So it sounds like he might have had some personal reservations about the outcome.
Maybe so.
Even though he felt bound by legal precedent to side with the majority.
That's a really insightful way to put it.
Thank you.
His concurrence suggests that he might have wished for a different outcome.
Okay.
But ultimately felt constrained by that legal framework within which the court operates.
Yeah.
He saw the inequalities of the system, but he didn't believe the court had the power to step in and fix them.
This case is so complex.
It is.
We've got the majority emphasizing rational basis, local control.
Yeah.
Dissenting opinions, raising concerns about fairness and the perpetuation of inequality.
Right.
And then this fascinating concurring opinion that just seems to straddle both sides of the issue.
Tries to have it both ways.
Where do we even go from here?
Well, even though the court ultimately sided with Texas and Rodriguez,
yeah,
this case didn't put an end to the debate about school funding equity.
Okay.
In fact, it's almost as if the case opened up this whole new chapter in the fight.
So the impact of Rodriguez extended far beyond this one particular case.
Absolutely. This case sparked a wave of legal challenges and legislative reforms across the country.
Wow.
States began grappling with how to create more equitable funding systems,
yeah,
without relying so heavily on property taxes.
Right.
While still respecting the principle of local control.
So it sounds like Rodriguez really forced states to take a hard look in the mirror.
They did.
And ask themselves some tough questions about fairness and equality in education.
It did. And those are questions that we're still grappling with today.
We are. It's amazing to see how one case can have such a ripple effect, even when, like, the immediate outcome doesn't seem to favor those seeking change.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, Rodriguez didn't lead to, you know, the federal government stepping in and,
right,
mandating equal funding for all schools. But,
right,
it did force this national conversation,
yeah,
about how we fund education and, no, the role of local control.
It makes me wonder what the landscape of public education would even look like today if the court had ruled differently in Rodriguez.
It's a great question.
Yeah.
Would we have a more equitable system?
Right.
Hard to say.
Yeah.
It's impossible to know for sure, but it's certainly possible that a different ruling could have spurred more dramatic changes.
Yeah.
At the federal level.
Like more systemic changes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Much more systemic changes.
Imagine if the court had, like, declared education a fundamental right.
Oh, wow.
How do you think that would have impacted school funding policies?
I think it would have had a profound impact.
Yeah.
You know, it might have led to a more centralized approach to school funding.
Okay.
With the federal government taking a more active role in ensuring that resources were distributed more equitably.
It's so hard to imagine a system where every school, regardless of location or the wealth of its surrounding community, had access to the same level of funding.
Yeah. It's a utopian ideal, isn't it?
It is.
But the pursuit of that ideal is what drives so much of the work in educational equity.
And Rodriguez, even though it didn't achieve that, definitely played a role in, like, keeping that conversation going.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
It exposed the flaws in a system that relied so heavily on property taxes to fund education.
Right.
And it forced policymakers and advocates to really grapple with those flaws.
So what does this all mean for you, listener?
Right. Why should you care?
Why does this case from the 1970s still matter today?
Well, Rodriguez is a really powerful reminder that legal battles,
yeah,
are just one part a much larger struggle for social justice.
Absolutely.
You know, it shows us that even when the courts don't deliver the outcome we might hope for,
right,
the fight for fairness and equality continues.
It's a reminder that we all have a role to play.
We do.
In shaping the kind of education system we want.
Absolutely.
For future generations.
For our kids and grandkids. Exactly. You know, okay, we need to keep asking those tough questions about resource allocation, local control, and what it really means to provide every child with an equal opportunity to succeed.
This deep dive has given you a solid foundation on San Antonio Independent School District v. Rodriguez.
We've covered a lot of ground.
We have the historical context,
mm-hmm,
the key arguments,
the lasting impact,
and the lasting impact it's had on the landscape of public education.
Absolutely.
But this isn't the end of the story.
No, it isn't.
We encourage you to explore those dissenting opinions in more depth.
Definitely.
Consider the perspectives of those who were fighting for change.
Mm.
And reflect on the ongoing challenges we face in creating a truly equitable education system for all.
Because the conversation about school funding and educational equity is,
yeah,
far from over.
Rodriguez was a pivotal chapter in that conversation.
It was.
But it's up to all of us to keep writing the next chapter.
Couldn't agree more.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into San Antonio Independent School District v. Rodriguez.
Yeah, it really is amazing to see how one case can have this kind of ripple effect.
It is.
Even when the immediate outcome, you know, doesn't really seem to favor those who are seeking change.
Right. Rodriguez didn't lead to, you know, federal intervention mandating equal funding for schools.
Yeah.
But,
yeah,
it did force this national conversation.
Yeah, what do we even do?
About how we fund education.
Right.
And what is the role of local control?
It makes me wonder, like, what would even the landscape of public education look like today?
Oh, yeah.
Had they ruled differently in Rodriguez?
It's a great question.
Would we have a more equitable system?
I don't know.
Yeah.
It's impossible to say for sure.
Right.
But, you know, it's certainly possible that a different ruling could have spurred more dramatic and systemic changes at the federal level.
Yeah, more systemic changes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Imagine if the court had just been like, boom, education's a fundamental right.
How do you think that would have impacted school funding policies?
I think it would have been huge.
Yeah.
It might have led to a much more centralized approach to school funding.
Right.
And the federal government taking a much more active role.
Right.
In ensuring that resources were distributed equitably.
It's just so hard to imagine a system where every school, regardless of location or the wealth of the surrounding community, just has access to the same funding.
Yeah, it's a utopian ideal.
It is.
But the pursuit of that ideal is really what drives so much of the ongoing work.
In the field?
And educational equity.
Yeah. And Rodriguez, even though it didn't achieve that ideal, it definitely
kept the conversation going.
Yeah, kept the conversation alive.
Yeah, it exposed those debt flaws in a system that relied so heavily on property taxes to fund education and forced policymakers and advocates to really grapple with those flaws.
So what does this mean for you, listener?
Yeah.
Why does this case from the 70s still matter today?
Well, Rodriguez is a powerful reminder that these legal battles are just one part of a much larger struggle for social justice.
Absolutely.
It shows us that even when the courts don't deliver the outcome we might hope for, the fight for fairness and equality continues.
Yeah, it's a reminder that we all have a role to play.
We do.
In shaping the kind of education system we want for future generations.
For our kids, for our grandkids.
Yeah.
It's our responsibility.
Exactly. And we need to keep asking those tough questions about resource allocation, local control, and what it really means to provide every child with an equal opportunity to succeed.
It all comes back to equal opportunity.
This deep dive has given you a really solid foundation on San Antonio Independent School District v. Rodriguez.
Mm-hmm.
We've covered a lot of ground.
We have.
We talked about the historical context, the key arguments, the lasting impact it's had on the landscape of public education.
All of it.
Yeah, but this isn't the end of the story.
No, it's not.
We encourage you to go explore those dissenting opinions in more depth.
Please.
Consider the perspectives of those who are really fighting for change and reflect on those ongoing challenges we face in creating a truly equitable education system for all.
Because this conversation is far from over.
Rodriguez was a pivotal chapter.
It was.
But it's up to all of us to keep writing the next chapter.
It is.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into San Antonio Independent School District v. Rodriguez.